And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X-1.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, 11:08 on a Sunday evening here. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I am your genial host, Carl Amari, and very genial. Right, Lisa?
Congenial, too.
Yeah, congenial also, yeah. I'm not conjoined. I'm not a conjoined twin.
Congenial. But you're a lot of other things.
Yes, I am a lot of things. Not all good.
I didn't say that.
You know, this is 58, program 58 in the series.
That's good.
Of the WGN Radio Theater. This is March 6, 2016. We're very happy to be here. We're here playing classic radio shows for you across the country because this station reaches like 40 states plus parts of Canada. So we have a big blowtorch here, WGN, the legendary. And we are broadcasting The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet tonight. Also, Suspense. You won't want to miss that. And then Gangbusters, so a good lineup, a comedy, a mystery, and a government drama. And it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor will reprise his role as Robert Langdon, professor of symbology at Harvard University, in the upcoming thriller Inferno, the sequel to Angels and Demons.
All right, so the number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win, Lisa?
They will
Wolf?
Win a pair of tickets to Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, playing at Theater at the Center.
This is a play?
It's a play.
Because,
theater
you know,
tickets.
That was a movie, too, by
yes,
Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes, it was.
It's a play. All right, so you win two tickets to this play.
It was a film and a novel.
This is true.
Yep.
Probably was a lot of other things, too,
yep.
that we can't go into right now. The number 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor is heard here in a scene from 2015's Bridge of Spies.
Apparently you're not an American citizen.
That's true.
And according to your boss, you're not a Soviet citizen either.
All right, if you know who that is, call us 312-981-7200. Win two tickets to see The 39 Steps. We'll find our winner after this break.
Okay, so we are playing Celebrity Scoop, and we are...
going to listen to that movie clip.
Listen to that movie clip one more time.
Apparently you're not an American citizen.
That's true.
And according to your boss, you're not a Soviet citizen either.
And we have Steve on the line from Riverside. Hey, Steve.
Good evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Steve, can you tell us who that celebrity voice is?
Tom Hanks.
Definitely Tom Hanks. Doesn't he have such a recognizable voice?
Most yes.
Steve, you are a winner. You have won two tickets to Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps. It's playing right now at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana, through March 20th. Of course, adapted from the film and the novel, as we mentioned earlier. And it's four actors who play over 140 characters. So congratulations. We hope you enjoy the show. For more information, you can go to theateratthecenter.com.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Appreciate you calling in. You got it, Lisa? You know where you're at here in the, you're not off script anymore? You're on off book?
Script? Book? I've got no script. This is an unscripted
series.
This is live.
We're live here on the WGN Radio Theater.
We
every
try to
single...
script. That doesn't work.
Our first show, we should tell the audience, our first
it's
show,
true.
We were so nervous. This was 58 shows ago.
It's true.
We're not really nervous anymore.
This is fun now.
But when we first were on the air, I was sweating profusely. I had to have a bucket under each one of my armpits. And we were really nervous, and so we decided, let's just script everything we're going to say.
We did.
And
we said, hi, I'm Carl Amari, and I'm Lisa Wolf, and this is...
Did you say Carl Amari or Lisa Wolf?
No, you said Karl Marx. Yeah. And then we said together.
Yeah.
And this is the WGN Radio Theater.
And it was so bad. It was like within about 2 minutes, we figured out we better throw this script in the garbage can.
Yeah, no scripts.
You know, and Dan was looking at us like, what the heck?
Well, he does that anyway.
Dan was like, who are these two idiots that they gave me to produce their show? And we're
sure
still idiots, but we're not as bad as that first show, right, Dan?
Yeah, you guys are getting to be better idiots.
Getting to be
better. This is why we love Dan.
I love it. All right, well, we're going to start things off with our first classic radio show this evening. We have The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. A little later, it's Suspense with Ray Milland. And then Gangbusters, a terrific episode from 1946. The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, it was a situation comedy. We like comedies here.
We do.
It came to radio in 1944. It was real-life husband and wife, Ozzie and Harriet Nelson. And the series focused mainly on the Nelson family at home, dealing with their everyday problems. And until 1949, their sons, David and Ricky, were portrayed by actors. But then in 1949... Ozzie said, you know what, our real sons could play the roles here. There was 402 radio episodes, and then it moved to TV in 1952, with the radio show continuing until 1954. The TV show lasted all the way to 1966. Oh. So it was a real mainstay on radio and TV. Just kind of, we all remember kind of, well, if you weren't around back then, like we weren't around when they were on the radio and early TV, but you watch them now on MeTV and things. They were sort of the idyllic, you know, family and great values and all that stuff. And it comes through on the radio and TV show. So let's tune this in. October 17th, 1948. It's called Taking the Boys Hiking. It stars Ozzie Nelson, Harriet Hilliard. Here's part one of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet.
Harriet.
Yes, dear?
Would you please, if you'll pardon the expression, stop the music for a second? Yeah. Take a look at this ad in Life magazine.
Yes, I saw that. Isn't that Joan of Arc pattern simply beautiful?
That's what I mean. No wonder everybody says the solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling.
The solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling. From Hollywood, International Silver Company, creators of International Sterling, presents The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, starring America's favorite young couple, Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard. It's a pleasant family scene we find in the living room of the Nelsons at 1847 Rogers Road. Fire in the fireplace, Nick the dog stretched out on the hearth, Ozzie on the couch reading the evening paper, and Harriet curled up in the easy chair with a basket of mending. Ah, this is the life.
Look here, dear.
Hmm? What is it?
I want you to see what happens to Ricky's trousers.
Oh, gee, they're getting pretty thin. How can he wear them out that way? He never sits down. Where are the boys?
Out in the kitchen. I told them they could stay up a little longer if they promised to do their homework.
Aren't these David's books here on the table?
What are you fellas doing out there?
Just getting a cracker.
Why don't you go out and take a look, dear?
Okay. How you doing, boys?
We're okay.
Well, Pop, this is a neat book.
Oh, wait a minute. What's the idea of reading comic books?
Pop, these aren't ordinary comic books. They're educational.
I suppose this first story is educational. Tommy Skunk lets him have it.
That's a swell story, Pop. Tommy Skunk is...
Never mind, Ricky. Why aren't you boys doing your homework?
Well, you don't understand, Pop. You see, we're supposed to do a composition on animals and birds and stuff. And these comic books tell you all about it. They're very educational.
We're going to read our school books, too, Pop.
Well, nevertheless, you promised to get right at your homework after dinner. I thought a promise meant a little more to you guys than something to be said and forgotten.
We didn't mean to break our promise, Pop.
We didn't think you'd catch us.
I don't think you understand, Pop. The teacher told us to get these comic books. They're very instructive.
All I can say is school certainly is a lot different than it was when I was a boy.
State's a lot better, isn't it, Pop?
I'm not too sure, Ricky.
Back in those days, everybody walked 10 miles through snow.
No, that's not what I mean. When I went to school, we didn't have to learn about nature out of comic books. We wanted to learn about animals and trees and plants. We went right out into the woods.
Yeah, Pop, but that was back in the old days.
Oh, they weren't the old days. It wasn't that long ago.
We don't have any woods around here.
Well, of course we do. There are plenty of woods around here. The hills are covered with trees.
Well, it was easier for you, Pop. Grandma Nelson told us that your Pop used to take you on hikes in the woods.
Yes, that's true. He did. Many an afternoon, I remember Pop would come in and say, "Let's go, boys. We're taking a hike." Off we'd go up to the pines or up to Phelps Woods.
I'll bet you had a lot of fun.
Yeah, we sure did. There weren't many dads like my father.
There aren't any now at all.
Gee, Pop, why don't you ever take us on hikes?
Well, I will. It's just...
Oh, boy, when can we go?
Well, anytime. It doesn't
Let's go tomorrow.
Well...
Can we, Pop? Can we go tomorrow?
Well, I'll see, maybe.
That's a promise.
Okay, it's a promise.
Do you think we'll catch a skunk?
You don't catch a skunk, Ricky. You run in the opposite direction.
Why?
Because they have awfully sharp teeth. Now, come on, let's get after that homework. And I mean the real school books, the spelling and stuff.
Okay, Pop.
Okay, Pop.
That bacon smells good.
Well, good morning. I was beginning to get worried. About an hour ago, I heard you say you were getting up.
I was. It was cold, and I wanted another blanket.
You better get a blanket for the eggs. They're cold, too.
The boys eaten yet?
Oh, hours ago. They're upstairs changing their clothes.
Changing their clothes for what?
They're going hiking today.
Oh. Well, it's a nice day for a hike. Me, I think I'll do a few things around the house. Maybe I'll try out that new couch on the porch. It looks pretty comfortable.
Well, perhaps I didn't hear the boys correctly, but aren't you taking them up to Indian Springs for a hike or something? They said you promised them you would.
I promised? Oh, that. Oh, well, we were just talking last night. I don't think it was anything definite.
Well, they're upstairs getting out their camping stuff. They seem to think they're going today.
Say, maybe I did mention that we might take a trip up there. Oh, they'll forget all about it. You know how they are. Enthusiastic about something, and 10 minutes later, it's all forgotten.
Well, they seem pretty enthusiastic about the hike.
Well, you know how they change from 1 minute to the next. Remember last summer? That rocket ship they were going to build and fly to the moon in it? They never did go.
I hope they won't be disappointed when they find out you aren't going to take them.
Well, who said anything about not taking them? They still want to go after I finish breakfast, I'll be only too glad to take it.
Oh, that's wonderful, dear. I'm sure they want to go. They've been talking about it all morning.
As a matter of fact, it'll probably be a lot of fun for me, too. Get a little exercise, some of that clear mountain air, hear the brown leaves crunching under my feet.
Oh, isn't it lucky?
What's the matter?
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoy the sound of crunching. I just burned the toast.
Hi, Oz. Well, what a coincidence. I was just on my way over to see you.
Oh, gee, I'm awful sorry, Thorny, but as a matter of fact, I'm a little short myself this week.
Oz, please. I just came over to pay a little neighborly visit. Here, have a cigar.
Oh, is Catherine... I mean, are you...
No, Oz, no special occasion. Here, enjoy a good smoke.
What's the matter with it?
Nothing's the matter with it. Golly, can't a man offer his neighbor a cigar without going through a third degree?
Well, don't forget I know you pretty well. You sure it's not going to explode or something?
Now, please, Oz, you have my word for it. Just a plain cigar. As a matter of fact, my boy, Will, bought it for me.
Will? Isn't he a little young for cigars?
I promised the dorm a little favor this afternoon, and he bought them for me to show his appreciation.
Oh. I don't think I've ever seen this brand before. It tastes kind of strong. Oh, what a rope! This is evil, Thorny.
Oh, please, Oz, don't throw it away. Will may be watching from the window. I don't want to hurt his feelings.
Well, I know, Thorny, but it smells like burning rubber or something.
Well, the boy's young yet. Doesn't know one cigar from another. But the thought was there.
I promised to spend the afternoon with my kids, too, but I certainly hope they aren't out buying me cigars. You know, you and I are different, Thorny. But most parents don't realize how important it is to spend time with their children.
Oh, sure. Especially boys. you'll find that the average boy patterns his entire behavior after his father.
Oh, no question about it. That's the reason we've got to be careful to set him a good example.
Well, I always say... I think you're right about that cigar, Oz. It smells horrible.
I think so many parents make a mistake when they make casual promises to their kids and then wriggle out of them in one way or another. It's no good.
And then the parent wonders... I think you can throw that away, Oz. Will probably isn't watching after all.
It's okay. It's not bad. Now, take me, for instance. I promised to take my boys on a hike this afternoon, and nothing in the world could keep me from it.
Hike? Oz, old man, you mean to stand there with that awful cigar in your mouth and tell me you don't know about the big professional football game this afternoon?
Football game?
Well, sure, down at the stadium.
Well, isn't that next week?
Of course not. It's this afternoon.
Well, I thought it was next week. I wonder if it's too late to get tickets.
How can you go? You promised to take the boys hiking.
Well, yes, but I'm sure they'd rather go to the football game. Don't you think?
I don't know, Oz. Did they seem very enthused about the hike?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, Harriet said they've been talking about it all morning. Why don't I just ask them which they'd rather do?
Well, don't you think that's a little unfair to them, Oz?
In what way?
Well, naturally, they'd know you'd rather go to a football game, so they'd probably give up the hike just to make you happy. But inside, they'd feel that their pop let them down.
You really think so?
Oh, yes, I do, Oz. A promise is a big thing to a kid. I remember once my grandfather promised to take me fishing. And at the last minute, he changed his mind and took me to a movie instead. A Tarzan picture.
And you never quite forgave him?
Not only that, I've never felt the same about Elmo Lincoln. Since that day, I don't seem to enjoy his pictures as much.
Yeah, I see what... Elmo Lincoln? He hasn't made a picture in years and years. They haven't shown those.
Oh, didn't I tell you, Oz, we got a television set?
Oh. I think you're right about the promise, Thorny.
Oh, I'm sure of it, Oz. What's one football game compared to setting the right example for David and Ricky?
I don't know what I could have been thinking of. A promise is a promise.
But that's the way I look at it, Oz. Even if we don't have a good time this afternoon, we'll have the satisfaction of knowing that we've kept our promises to our boys.
Yeah. Where did you promise to take Will?
I was a little smarter than you were, Oz. I promised to take Will to the football game.
All right, that's the first portion of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Ozzie Nelson, Harriet Hilliard, they were terrific on radio. They were even probably better on television. Their television show was a huge hit. I mean, radio they did very well, but this was one of the radio shows that was even more successful when it went to television. Same thing with Gunsmoke. Gunsmoke was very popular on radio, but much more popular on TV. There was other ones, too. Superman, you know, when the Superman series, it started on radio,
right,
and then moved to television with George Reeve, and that was more popular. So a few were like that. Ozzie and Harriet was one of them. This is October 17, 1948. We'll get back to The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet in just a few minutes. I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a website. It is WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com. We have our full schedule there, all of the shows that we are going to play each and every week. And we are on the air twice a week, not just Sunday nights. We're here Saturday nights and Sunday nights. That's right. They doubled our time. They said, hey, you know what? We like these classic radio shows, so why not do it Saturday and Sunday? And Lisa said, okay.
We pretty much jumped at that, so we didn't breathe. We just grabbed it.
They just asked Lisa to be the host on Saturday. And then
I let Carl and Mike
and then I called
come along.
Todd and Stephanie, and I said, you know,
please,
can I do it too with Lisa?
And I had to do a little bit of begging, but I got it worked out for you. Well, you're a little bit of a whiner.
I am a whiner.
But I got it worked out for you, didn't I?
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. They were going to go right ahead without me there on Saturdays.
I wouldn't let that happen.
I would have been home. I would have been so...
You'd be laying in the bathtub listening to WGN Radio Theater.
In my big, giant bathtub, right.
Alone.
Yeah, all alone with my rubber ducky. That's what I would have been doing. And that would not have been as fun as being here on Saturday and Sundays.
You could call in every now and then.
Yeah, I'll call in and give a trivia tidbit about one of these shows. So Saturdays and Sundays we're here playing these classic radio shows. 3 hours on Saturday, 3 hours on Sunday. We play six classic radio shows over that time. And Mike Costella, our executive producer, the very talented Mike Costella, is the one that takes these shows and does a cleanse on them. He takes like borax, you know, and some and a
cleans them right up.
Cleans them right up.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, and makes them
the dirty
sound
work, right?
like they do. Because, you know, when we get these, they're on a, like a transcription disc, and they're not always the best sound quality. I mean, we do work with a master recording, but they're not always. They don't sound as good as when you hear them on the air. Mike spends a lot of time on that. We want to take our hat off to Mike Estella for that. Thank you, Mike, and everything else you do with the show. So, that's our team. Of course, we have the great Dan Long in there, the best in the business in the booth. Hats off to you too, Dan. And we really love working with you. And he puts all these shows on the air. If it wasn't for...
And he puts up with us.
Yeah.
So
and he hits the
like
button.
You know, double whammy there.
And you know what's a great thing? If I say, all right, let's get back to Ozzy and Harriet, I'm not hitting the button. It's Dan hitting the button. So it's like, we're working together,
ooh,
man. Working together.
The team.
I always look forward to the theme music that Dan plays. You know, he always picks up nice stuff here to bring us back.
This is Sting.
To the show. Yeah, I like that.
Right?
The Police, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, yeah, okay.
Where's the police? Police? Where? Police? Mike? Is there police? Oh, the music is the police. Okay, got it. Got it. So what's up, Lisa?
Hey,
look at that
Carl.
Smiley. Look at that smiley face on Lisa. Too bad this isn't television.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
I could tell you flossed today.
I did floss twice already.
Lisa's
so far.
Lisa's quite the flosser.
Once with actual floss and once with the water pick.
Honestly, I did the water pick in the morning, and I have a flosser, a hand flosser.
I don't like the hand,
came to the radio station.
I don't like the hand. I don't like those things that are on the stick.
That's what I do.
Don't like those.
Oh, I like that because you don't have to get.
I have the water pick,
gross.
And then I have the regular floss.
I don't like the regular.
And I just get
floss.
In there, and you know.
Yeah, get that stuff out of there.
Get that out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did buy that water flosser for you.
I know, Lisa. You know what? Every single day I think of you.
You think of me, right?
Yeah, because I'm flossing away and I'm like, Lisa Wolf bought me this. I'm
telling you, that's a great gift. And then Mike joined the bandwagon and bought one for himself.
Yep.
The only thing I can think of.
It's a club.
The only reason I can think of that you bought that for me is because I must have bad breath.
Well, we do sit close and we talk to each other a
lot. She was probably like,
lot.
You know, I got a perfect gift for you, Carl.
Some floss.
A water pick.
Okay, let me remind the listeners that you guys actually go to the dentist like every 3 months.
Every 3 months.
So,
well, I just went last week.
No, not every three months. I go every 4 months.
It's 3 times a year I go, 4 months.
I mean, that's really a little too much, don't you think?
Yeah.
I just went last
Especially
week.
Especially when
clean.
You're telling me that your dentist is saying, why do you come here this much? For there's nothing to take
do.
Out of here.
I literally sit in the chair and the girl says, or what do you want me to do here? Want me to just do a song and dance for you? Because there's no plaque.
Yeah, that's
and
a,
I'm just
that's
like, well,
because we continue to go, so it doesn't have a chance to build up. Had we not gone, it wouldn't be so
and that's,
easy.
And all of this is very important to old
it
time
is.
Radio, isn't it?
Okay, let's
it's
get
very,
back.
Very, very important.
You digress.
So let's get back to I'm sure Ozzy and Harriet were all about
probably flossers.
All about tooth health, teeth health,
tooth
oral
teeth.
Hygiene. I'm sure they were all about that with their kids. So let's get back to this now. Let's go back to October 17th, 1948, for the conclusion to The Adventures of Ozzy and Harriet.
Mom?
Yes, dear?
We've been wondering, Mom, is Pop pretty good about keeping promises?
Well, if you're worried about him taking you on the hike, he's looking forward to it.
Oh, gee.
What kind of talk is this?
Will Thornberry just said there's a professional football game today.
His father's taking him to the game, and all we get is an old hike.
Well, I'm surprised at you two guys. I think you have a pretty nice dad. You know, it isn't every father who's good enough to take his boys hiking. You don't want to hurt his feelings, do you?
Well, golly, no, but do you think if we told him we'd rather see the game than go hiking, it'd hurt his feelings?
You're taking a chance.
Let's take the chance, David.
No, Ricky, we don't want to hurt Pop's feelings.
I'll tell you what you could do. You might just hint that if he'd rather go to the football game, you'd be willing to postpone the hike.
Hiya, fellas.
Hi, Pop.
Well, beautiful weather for a hike, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice day for football game, too.
Ozzy, the boys have just heard that there's going to be a big football game at the stadium today, and they thought that if you'd like to postpone the hike, well, they'd understand.
We know how much you like football, Pop.
Oh, come now, boys. Do you think your old dad would break his promise? Besides, on a beautiful day like this, who wants to sit in a crowded stadium and watch a football game?
Shut up, Ricky.
No, sir. This is a perfect day for a football, this is a day for a hike in the woods. What I mean is we can go to a football game any day, but a hike is something that, well, Indian Springs, you can just imagine how beautiful it is up there at Indian Springs. Indians and springs.
Well, we just thought that maybe...
Oh, thanks very much, fellas, but don't you worry. Your old dad isn't going to let you down. No, sirree. A promise is a promise.
Ever since Ozzie Nelson was a little boy, his parents taught him courage, determination, and a sense of honor. These are the virtues it takes to keep a promise. When little Oswald was 8 years old, he was courageous.
Look at me, Sally. I can eat worms.
When he was 12 years old, he was determined.
Don't worry, Mom. I'll finish eating this piece of chocolate cake.
When he was 16, he had a highly developed sense of honor.
Gwendolyn, I must confess, before I met you, I kissed another girl. Ouch!
Yes, Ozzie learned early. At 19, he made his first important promise.
I promise to pay the Blue Sky Auto Finance Company the sum of $30 a month.
And he kept his promise. In fact, the finance company made sure of it. And so the Ozzie Nelson of today has the same grim determination to keep his promise. He's out in the garage now, dusting off his hiking boots. Meanwhile, Harriet has put in her daily call to her mother.
Hello?
Hello, Mother. It's Harriet.
Oh, hello, dear.
How are you?
Oh, not so good, dear. My feet hurt, and I feel a headache coming on.
Have you taken an aspirin?
Yes, but my feet still hurt. I went to that modern art exhibit today, and I warn you, dear, don't go.
That bad?
Dreadful. Simply a collection of three-cornered apples, women with six arms and purple hair. The only thing in a frame that made sense turned out to be the fire hose.
Today's the last day of the exhibit, isn't it?
Yes, thank goodness.
Well, I'm glad you told me. Ozzie promised to take me, but now I won't insist on it.
How is Ozzie, dear?
Oh, he's fine. He and the boys are going on a hike today.
Today? Isn't he going to the football game?
No, he seems to prefer the hike.
Really? That doesn't sound like Ozzie.
Well, frankly, I think he really wants to go to the game, but he's just sticking to his promise. You know, it's silly because the boys want to go to the game, too.
Well, dear, if Ozzie wants to go to the game and the boys want to go to the game, why don't they just go to the game and forget about the hike?
It sounds simple.
It's as simple as ABC.
But this is an XYZ family. I guess they'll all go on the hike and be perfectly miserable just so Ozzie can prove he keeps his promises.
But you just said he promised to take you to the art exhibit.
Yes, but he can't because it's closing today, and last night he promised the boys...
Huh?
Oh, Mother, I have a wonderful idea. Would you like to hear it?
Now, Harriet, if it's some plan to trick Ozzie, I don't want to hear about it.
Okay, Mother.
You know I never like to interfere in your little family squabbles. So I'd rather you wouldn't
tell me about
it.
Okay, Mother, I'll call you again. Goodbye, Mother.
Of course, if you insist and you feel that you need my advice, Harriet. Harriet? Operator, we've been disconnected.
What do you want, Mom?
I think I know how you can go to the football game today.
Oh.
I'm not promising, mind you. It's just an idea.
Oh, boy, David, Mom's got an idea.
Well, don't say it as if it was the first one I ever had.
What's your idea, Mom?
Well, listen to this. Daddy doesn't want to break his promise to take you hiking. But it just happens that he made a promise to me.
Gee, are you stuck, too?
No, it's just that... Oh, here he comes, boys. Let me do the talking.
Well, come on, fellows. Get on your hiking clothes.
Dear, I'm terribly sorry, but I think you've forgotten something.
Well, I don't think so. Here's my hatchet, my canteen, my toolkit, my collapsible drinking cup.
No, I don't mean anything like that, dear. I mean you made a promise to me.
What's that?
Remember, dear, you promised to take me to the modern art exhibit whatever day I wanted to go.
I promised that?
Yes, don't you remember? One night last week.
Well, we'll go sometime next week.
Today's the last day.
Oh, that's a shame. Well, it'll probably be around another year or two.
No, dear. Hmm? You promised to take me. A promise is a promise.
But, Harriet, I'm taking the boys on a hike.
Well, you'll have to postpone the hike. A previous promise eliminates any promise made later. That's the law.
That's the law.
David, don't hit the table with that walnut cracker. Harriet, the boys are looking forward to this hike, aren't you, fellows?
Oh, that's okay, Pop. You go ahead and take Mom to the art exhibit.
Yeah, Pop, we don't mind.
I'm sorry, dear, but you did promise to take me.
I didn't promise, Harriet. I said I'd take you, but that isn't a promise.
What is it, Pop?
It's, Ricky, your mother and I are talking.
You better change your clothes, dear.
What a fine couple of pals you two turned out to be.
Well, gee, Pop, you promised Mom you'd take her. We can't do anything.
Well, you didn't have to give up the hike so easily. You'd think you didn't even want to go.
Gee, Pop.
Why didn't you say something? You're only 8 years old, Ricky. Why didn't you cry? Oh, of course I'm not sore at you. I suppose the art exhibit won't be so bad. Gives a man culture, I guess.
You don't mind going, Pop?
Oh, no. If it'll make your mother happy, I'm only too glad to take her. It'll probably be very interesting. Well, I'll see you guys later.
Where are you going, Pop?
Outside to see if I can't find something wrong with the car. I'm just getting the car. We're going downtown.
To the football game?
No, we're going to the modern art exhibit at Simon's Galleries.
The art exhibit? Mm-hmm. Oh, I might have known. Those long, tapering fingers.
No.
Those delicate hands.
No,
your white shirt splashed with paint.
No, that's just a little ketchup. I had a sandwich.
Oh, Mr. Nelson, I'll bet your paintings win every prize.
No. I'm only going to the art exhibit to look.
To look?
Yes, I'm not a painter.
You're not a painter?
No.
Only a student.
No.
You live in a garret, a tiny cubicle, a niche, a cubbyhole, a dump.
Oh, it's...
Your room is so tiny you have to paint with your hands in your pockets.
Oh, I... Where does my model sit?
In the next room. You have to peek through the keyhole.
Oh, what?
Feverishly you work on your portrait day in and day out.
No,
it means fame. The world will soon recognize your genius.
I'm just...
And so you paint and paint and paint. It takes form at last. Only a few more days, and then it's finished. Your masterpiece is complete. What depth, what beauty. Your very soul is in this painting.
Yes.
Soon the world will see your path to your garret. And so to the little art shop around the corner, not knowing that someday this painting will be famous, the dealer offers you $5.
$5? This is worth $5,000.
But you're hungry. You must sell it.
I won't.
But you must eat.
I won't sell it. I'll eat it.
Nelson, what are you talking about?
My man, what do you think that cheap dealer offered me? It's... Wait a minute. Emmy Lou, you're all confused. I'm going to the art exhibit just to look at the pictures. But I don't want to go even.
Well, then why are you going?
Because I promised Mrs. Nelson I'd take her. I'll take her, but I won't like it.
Is that being fair to Mrs. Nelson?
Well,
she wants you to take her to the art gallery, and you're being mean about it. You aren't yourself. What happened to the kind, gentle, loving Mr. Nelson?
He's at the football game.
Well, you're cheating if you do something you don't believe in it. Think of your wife, Mr. Nelson. Use the Stanislavski method.
What has Stanislavski been thinking of my wife?
It's a dramatic technique. You keep repeating something until you believe it. For instance, you say you're a leaf until you actually believe you are a leaf. You can do the same thing with the art exhibit. Keep saying, I want to go to the art exhibit until you want to go.
I want to go to the art exhibit. I want to go to the art exhibit.
Well?
I think I'll try I'm a leaf.
Yourself for Mrs. Nelson's sake. Keep repeating it. I want to go to the art exhibit. It'll be fun.
I want to
go to the art exhibit. It'll be fun.
It'll be fun.
You can do it, Mr. Nelson. You're strong. You're brave.
I'm strong. I'm brave. I want to go to the art exhibit. It'll be fun. You're a liar. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. I want to go. It'll be fun. No, it won't. Yes, it will. I'm a leaf. I want to go. I want to go to the art exhibit. It'll be fun. I want to go. It'll be fun. The art exhibit. I want to go to the art exhibit. I want to feast my eyes on those beautiful colors. I want to run barefoot through those gorgeous paintings. I want to go to the art exhibit.
You want to go?
Yes, I want to go to the art exhibit.
Why?
It'll be fun.
Who says so?
Stanislavski.
Well, what does a football player know about art?
I'm all ready for the art exhibit, Harriet.
You are?
Yes, it'll be fun.
You said that. You don't really want to go, do you?
But I do.
You didn't a few minutes ago.
But I've changed since then.
The football game today is supposed to be the best of the season.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a grudge game. And I want to go to the art exhibit. I want to go to the art exhibit. I want to go to the art exhibit.
Beautiful day, isn't it, dear?
Yes, but we'll be better off at the art exhibit indoors. I think it's going to rain.
Rain? There isn't a cloud in the sky.
Well, they're all hiding behind the mountains waiting for the football game to start.
Ozzie, if you'd rather go to the football game, don't be afraid to say so.
Oh, you can go to a football game anytime. I want to go to the art exhibit. Harriet, you made the wrong turn there. The art exhibit's to the left. You're going to get into all the traffic going to the stadium.
I've decided I want to go to the game instead.
But I thought you wanted to go to the art exhibit. This is the last day, and a promise is a promise. Harriet, I won't let you make the sacrifice. I made you a promise, and I'll stick to it.
Dear, when the rules of living were drawn up, there was one rule that headed the list, and it supersedes all other rules.
Harriet, nothing is more firmly established than the obligation to keep a promise.
Oh, yes, it is. A woman's right to change her mind.
But I want to go to the art exhibit.
You'd better quit while you're still ahead, Stanislavski. I might change my mind again.
But what about the boys?
They're going to meet us at the stadium. It seems they met Emmy Lou, and she convinced them they ought to hike down there.
Harriet, are you sure you honestly want to go to the football game?
Oh, definitely, dear. I want to go to the football game. I want to go to the football game.
I want to go to the football game.
I want to go to the football game.
And Harriet will be back in just a moment. Hey, that was a happy ending, if there ever was one. But, you know, I sometimes wonder what it would be like if women didn't have that unalterable right to change their minds.
You don't believe in it, Mr. Smith?
Well...
Oh, you think a woman should decide one thing and stick to it, no matter what?
Well,
Even if she's just about to buy a certain silver pattern, and then discovers at the last minute that International Sterling's Joan of Arc is back again, and buys that instead?
Well, Hey, did you do that?
Uh-huh. And it was the best change of mind I ever had. Golly, it was wonderful to find I could get Joan of Arc again. I've been waiting for it for years now.
You and thousands of other women. Joan of Arc is one of the most beloved patterns International Sterling ever created. During the war, when it wasn't being made, the postman brought scores of letters to International Sterling, each one asking for its return. And now, in answer to those requests, Joan of Arc is back, as lovely, as magnificent as ever.
Oh, and Mr. Smith, I found out something when I bought my set the other day. I didn't have to pay for it all at once. The international dealer had a special payment plan, specially suited to my own budget.
That's right. So you see, right now is the very best time to buy that silver you've been dreaming of. Joan of Arc, solid silver with beauty that lives forever. Created by famous International Sterling.
Boy, did we have a good time today.
It was neat, boy.
What happened to you guys? I thought you were going to meet us at the stadium.
We went over to Will Thornberry's instead.
But I thought Will's father promised to take him to the game.
Well, he did, you see, but he fell asleep on the couch and Will didn't want to wake him up. Anyway, by the time the picture was over, it was too late.
Picture?
Yeah, we were watching a picture on television.
It was real neat, boy. Tarzan of the Apes with Elmo Lincoln.
Tune in again next week to another adventure of Ozzie and Harriet, starring Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard.
And remember, the solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling.
Yes, Harriet, the solid silver with beauty that lives forever is International Sterling.
Appearing in support of Ozzie and Harriet were John Brown, Tommy Bernard, Henry Blair, Janet Waldo, and Loreen Tuttle. Original music was composed and conducted by Billy May. This program originates in the Hollywood studios of the National Broadcasting Company and is also broadcast over the Trans-Canada Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This adventure of Ozzie and Harriet will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Warren Smith speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And that's The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, good radio broadcast from October 17th, 1948, with Ozzie Nelson, Harriet Hilliard, and all the gang on that episode from NBC. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, there is our familiar theme. The WGN Radio Theater is on the air. This is the second hour. I hope you were with us in our first hour. You would have heard The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Well, this hour, it's Suspense, starring Ray Milland. You won't want to miss that. In our third hour, from 1 a.m. till 2 a.m. in the morning, we'll play Gangbusters in 1946. And that show, Lisa, Gangbusters, was true crime cases. They were closed cases from the files of the FBI. And you know who oversaw that program to make sure it was accurate and that we always had the FBI in the best light? J. Edgar Hoover. He was very, very much involved in that program. And Clint Eastwood produced a movie, a really good movie, on J. Edgar Hoover a few years ago. Leonardo DiCaprio, who just won the Academy Award for Best Actor, starred as J. Edgar Hoover in that. So we'll have a Gangbusters episode for you as well. So we play classic radio shows every single weekend here, Saturday and Sunday nights, from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. My sidekick, my Tonto, my Cato is here, Lisa Wolf. She's my Jingles. There's a few other sidekick names, but you're very jingly.
I'm jingly.
Yeah. And then Mike Estella. Yeah, my Mike Estella, executive producer, Dan Long, the producer in there. So that's the team. And, of course, Kit Clem, who is my bodyguard.
A bunch of other stuff too
is here. And Daryl Foley's here. There's a lot of people in this.
Darren.
That's what I said,
you
didn't
said
I?
Darryl.
Oh, sorry, it's Darren, of course. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people in here. There's a lot of activity,
It's a party.
It's kind of a party here. Well, everybody here loves old-time radio, right?
That's for sure.
And that's what we do here. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars as the grandma in the upcoming fantasy A Monster Calls, about a young boy who escapes into a world of monsters as a way to cope with his mother's terminal illness.
All right, what do you win?
You win two tickets to see The 39 Steps, which is playing right now at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana.
All right, so the number to call, 312-981-7200. You could win two tickets to see The 39 Steps. If you can name this celebrity. Now, here's a hint. She played Chaffee Bicknell in 2008's Baby Mama.
Angie, bottom line, you're Karen Kate's baby. And you do want to get paid, right?
Right. You want to get paid. She was like a therapist in this movie.
Yep.
Very funny. All right. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is the one and only WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Angie, bottom line, you're Karen Kate's baby. And you do want to get paid, right?
And our producer, Dan, took a call off the air, and we are so happy to give two tickets to David from Chicago. He will be seeing Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, playing at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana, through March 20th. And you can check that out at theateratthecenter.com.
All right, very cool. We're talking about Alfred Hitchcock, right?
Yes.
Well, guess what? He was instrumental in having Suspense come on the air back in 1942, because they were trying to find, CBS was saying, hey, here's Alfred Hitchcock, one of the greatest directors of all time. Let's find a radio series for him to direct. So they were like, okay, let's call the show Suspense. And so this was all about Alfred Hitchcock, and they had him do a pilot. So he was involved in the pilot, and then it got sold to CBS, and he was not ever part of it again. Well, that's the way it worked. He was too busy.
He's a comedy
girl,
right?
I'm too busy to do this anymore. So that was it. He did it a little better than I just did.
I was thinking that.
So it was billed as radio's outstanding theater of thrills, suspenseful thrillers, the biggest names in Hollywood. It really and truly, in my opinion, was the best mystery series of the golden age of radio. And nearly 1,000 broadcasts, and it did make the transition to television in 1949. We have a great episode for you now starring Ray Milland, and this is called Night Cry. It's going back to October 7th, 1948. Here's part one of a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense. Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Mr. Ray Milland in Anton Leder's production of Night Cry by William L. Stewart. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Report to the captain of the Homicide Bureau, Manhattan. From Detective Lieutenant Mark Deglin. You know, we always say that the cat waits for the mouse to run, the dog waits for the cat to run, and the police wait for the killer to run. But if he's a smart killer, a real smart guy, if he doesn't run at all, but just stands and laughs, or even walks quietly and easily away, he can really get away with murder. There's a lot of murder around Homicide Squad beside the stiffs we work on, like the knifing I got when they passed me up and made you, Lieutenant Knight, an acting captain and head of the squad. Funny how a little promotion goes to a guy's head. It was Friday that you got your promotion, and that evening, after you'd sent for me, I had to warm a chair outside until you were ready to see me. Remember?
Captain Knight will see you now, Lieutenant.
Well, that's sweet of him.
Come on over and have a chair, Declan. Mark?
Sure, why not? Congratulations, Captain Knight.
That's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Mark. You know, I didn't want this. I didn't do anything to get it.
Sure. Of course, playing golf with the commissioner's brother-in-law had nothing to do with it.
You know it didn't, Mark. The force isn't run that way. Now, look, I've worked with you for a long time, and there's no reason why we can't get along fine.
Sure, no reason.
I'm the first to say that you're the best man on Homicide, Mark. And... well, it's not my place to tell you, but I think you ought to know the reason why you didn't get the promotion instead of me.
I'm listening.
You know, Mark, the police department has come a long way from what it used to be. Now, take Homicide. It's no longer a question of one man going out and sapping some poor devil until he gets a confession. All of us, detectives, identification, lab men, telegraph, the medical examiner's office, we're all one big team.
You know, that sounds like the commissioner's number two speech for the Rotarians.
But it's true, Mark. And that's why the police board didn't give you this job. In an age of cooperation, you're still a one-man force.
How many killers did I bring in during the last 5 years?
Every one you went after. I know that, and so does the police board. But a lot of them had marks on them that they didn't have before you went after them. And some of them had to be carried in.
Sure, but I got them, and quick. Some of them I even had booked before that team you mentioned got around to deciding what killed the victims.
I know. That, but there's always a chance that the next time you'll bring in some guy who had nothing to do with it. Yes? He's on his way. It's a call. Now, you and Riley will take it. Now, look, Mark.
Yeah?
Riley's a good teammate for you. He's proud of the force, you know, and he'll be just as proud of your work as his own. And we'll talk about this later.
Sure. After I bring in another killer. Where's the killing, Riley?
In the 70s, near Riverside, a gambling joint.
Some guy rolled a 7 the wrong way?
Could be. Mark, I was sorry to hear about
the... forget about it, Dan. If I'd wanted a desk job, I wouldn't be a cop. I'd rather bring him in than look at him after they're brought in. Come on, let's go. And for a minute, I didn't mind not getting the captaincy.
There was something about being on a job, about starting out to look for a killer that beat anything in the world. We got to the big brownstone that was the gambling joint. Riley and I walked up the front stairs through the rain. The patrolman on the door let us in. There were three guys in the foyer. One of them was a good-looking guy in a dinner jacket, with a look in his eye that probably came from watching a lot of guys try to make a four the hard way. The second was a patrolman, still writing in his notebook. And the third was a guy on the floor, dead. He was partly on his side, and there was a knife in his back. He was wearing a suit that had cost plenty before he spoiled it by bleeding all over it. The patrolman saluted as we came up.
Corcoran, sir, the doorman called me off the beat. The dead man's name is L.O. Morrison. Mr. Carlstrom here is the owner of the club, and he says...
Save it, Corcoran, till we ask for it.
Yes, sir.
What do you think, Riley?
He's dead, all right.
Well, take another look at that stiff. He's got a fresh cut over one eye, which he must have gotten before he was killed.
Yeah, you're right. He wouldn't be that bruised if he got it when he was killed.
Well, let's find out how he got it. All right, you.
Yes, Inspector?
Not Inspector, Lieutenant. Lieutenant Deglin.
Oh, yes, I've heard of you, Lieutenant Deglin.
Well, stick around. You'll get some first-hand knowledge. What kind of a joint is this?
Well, this is a private club. The members have their own keys and let themselves...
Oh, a key club, huh?
Yes, that's right.
Who'd the dead man have a fight with?
Well, I don't like to say this, but he had a fight with Kendall Payne. I asked Mr. Payne to leave.
Kendall Payne, isn't that the guy who was a war hero?
Yes, that's right.
War hero, huh? And he's still fighting the war. Well, having a key could come back after you threw him out.
Yes, he could have come back.
Was he alone?
No, Miss Morgan Taylor was with him.
Where does Payne live?
Well, here's his address book, Lieutenant. Payne is in here.
Thanks. Okay, Dan, you can finish up here. I think I'll look up this war hero.
Mark, don't you think you ought to wait for the medical examiner and the ID boys to arrive?
Why? I don't need the ME to tell me this guy is dead, nor identification to tell me he had a fight with Payne. This murder is tailor-made, and I'm going down and try Payne on for size. It was a short street just off the Hudson River where a lot of artists and duck wallopers lived. There was a dim light in the hall, and I went up the stairs. Light spilled out from under the door that had Payne's name on it, and I knocked.
All right, it's open.
He was sitting on the bed. He had an army kit bag open and partly packed. There was a white bandage over his right eye, and the drawers of the bureau were open.
Now, what do you want?
Little talk. Your name Payne?
Yeah, but you're not anyone I know. Beat it.
We'll get acquainted. This badge will introduce us.
You know what you can do with that badge.
You know, I almost forgot you were a hero. How long you been here, hero?
Maybe an hour, now go on, get out.
How'd you get to be a hero, Payne? With a knife?
Look, I don't know you or your badge. Now go on, get out.
You're a tough little punk, aren't you, hero? Especially tough for a boy who's just killed a man.
What are you talking about?
Where's the dame you were with? Maybe she can tell you about the guy you had a fight with, then went back and killed.
Look, you keep her out of it.
Look, sonny... You were maybe tough overseas, but back here you're just another meatball. Now talk.
What are you, a tough cop? Well, let's see. How tough?
Sure, I'm a tough cop. I hit him three times. No more than that. He fell. His head hit in the edge of the bed, then he slumped to the floor. His breathing was heavy for a minute, and then it stopped. I stood looking at him, rubbing my knuckles. Then I reached down and felt his wrist. He was dead. Well, it was another trial the taxpayers wouldn't have to pay for. I got up, went to the phone I'd seen in the hall.
Night talking.
Deglin here. Look, I just...
Oh, wait a minute, Mark. Hey, close that door, will you? Now that the case is broken, Mark, they're talking their heads off.
Case is broken?
Yeah, it was Carlstrom. He got panicky and started to run. You know, Riley, when they run, he shoots. He nailed him in the shoulder, and Carlstrom thought he was going to die and confessed. The dead man was into the gambling house for 50 grand and wouldn't pay, so Carlstrom stuck the knife into him. Hello? You still on?
Yeah. I just dropped some change.
Did you find Payne?
I think he's cleared out. Clothes and the bathroom stuff's all gone.
He has? Well, he probably saw something. He didn't want to get mixed up in it. Well, we can always put out an alarm on him. Go home and get some sleep, Mark.
Sure. I'll get some sleep.
While I hung on, hung up, walked back into Payne's room. I looked down at him, thought what a lousy time to make a mistake. Well, there was only one smart way out. I had to bring Kendall Payne back to life long enough to be seen taking a run-out powder. I needed some good, reliable witnesses. That way, I could get away with murder.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Mr. Ray Milland in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
That's the voice of Boris Badenoff right there. Paul Frees doing the announcing on that. Remember the Boris Badenoff in the Bullwinkle cartoons?
Yeah, Rocky.
Remember those?
Bullwinkle,
Rocky and Bullwinkle, sure. Yeah. That's Night Cry, Ray Milland, Part 1. We'll get back to this episode of Suspense in just a few minutes. I got to tell our listeners that we have something really special, really, really special. So please listen up, folks, because this is cool. This is all for you. We have a special promotion running right now with our new sponsor, Mies Meals. Now, I made a big mistake yesterday. I forgot to spell Mies for our listeners. It's M-E-E-Z, MiesMeals.com, M-E-E-Z, Meals.com. If you want dinner for two, up to $25, it's on us and it's on Mies Meals. Mies Meals has amazing food, and it's delivered all over Chicagoland. You order the food ahead of time. You order it by noon, or by 10 a.m., I believe it is. Or is it noon? I think it's noon on Friday. And then the meals come to you, and it's incredible. Lisa and I and Mike are all on the Mies Meals program. I get three meals a week from them, two meals each time for my son and I. And Scott Zuckerman, the CEO, was in here yesterday. We launched as Mies Meals as a sponsor. But we want to do this special limited-time offer for all of our listeners. We want to give you a free dinner for two. That's right, a free dinner for two, up to $25. All you have to do is go to Mies Meals, which is M-E-E-Z, meals.com, and pick out your dinner for two. You have to register. And then what happens is they're going to deliver this to you free.
But right? I want to explain a little bit about what Mies Meals is, because what they do is deliver the ingredients so that you can prepare it in your home.
Right.
So you go online to their website and you are allowed to choose whatever meals interest you. And I'm a really picky eater, so I have had no problem finding delicious and healthy meals that I would enjoy eating, and my daughter and my husband and my family. And we ordered special ways, you know, no coconut for this child, no peanuts over here. Somebody might be gluten-free. Everybody has their own, you know, whims, but they are able to accommodate all those requests.
Right.
So I choose my meals. The ingredients come delivered to me, all packaged,
all
in
measured,
an ice pack.
All chopped.
Yes, all ready and prepared to go. They come with ice packs in a big insulated container, and it's left right on my doorstep every Monday so that I can prepare these meals at home with my family and have a fresh, healthy, and delicious meal that I have chosen.
Way to go. Exactly right, Lisa. So go to Mies, M-E-E-Z, meals.com, and take advantage of this limited time offer. We want to buy you dinner. Mies Meals and the WGN Radio Theater want to buy you dinner for two, up to $25 from the Mies Meals menu. So just go there and take advantage of this. It's delivered right to your home.
And you want to tell them the code so that they can do that?
Yeah, you have to put in the code RADIO at checkout. That's very important. Put in the code RADIO. And this is for everyone listening to our show. Everyone listening to our show, there's a limited time offer, free dinner for two, up to $25. Just go to Mies Meals, M-E-E-Z, meals.com. Take advantage of this and make sure you put in the code RADIO at checkout. And Mike, you're on the program too.
I haven't picked anything out yet, but what I like about this is I actually go onto their website as I'm scrolling through all these different meals. It actually tells me how long it will take to prepare and make.
Yeah.
And because you have me working like a madman, this is actually really efficient.
And
for
you
me.
Know what? You get like cue cards to make this stuff. I felt like a chef making this thing.
You know, go to Facebook and you can see photos of me actually preparing my first meal with Mies Meals.
Very cool. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. It's 12:35 in the morning here on Monday morning, and welcome to the show. We're here till 2 in the morning and playing classic radio for you on Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Please join us each weekend. All right, we're tuning into Suspense. Let's go back to October 7th, 1948, Ray Milland starring in Night Cry.
And now Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Ray Milland as Detective Lieutenant Mark Deglin in Night Cry, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
As I said before, Captain Knight, the cat waits for the mouse to run, the dog waits for the cat to run, and the police wait for the killer to run. Only I wasn't going to run. I stood there and tried to figure how to have Kendall Payne seen running away. After that, Payne would be just another guy who gets scared and beat it. And I'd still be Lieutenant Mark Deglin, the guy who didn't make mistakes. It took me a while, in the night and the rain, to do what I had to do. Quite a while. But I finally got to my own apartment. I still had Payne's kit bag with his name stenciled on the side, but I could get rid of that later. I tossed it on the floor behind my desk and went to sleep. When I got to headquarters the next morning, it was late. Payne's disappearance had the DA demanding we find him. Dan Riley was already out trying to trace Payne, and I could just imagine him bulldogging along from one witness to another. And then you said...
Suppose you go up to Connecticut, Mark, and talk to Payne's girl, Morgan Taylor. Just routine.
Just routine? Okay, I'll take care of it. I found where Morgan Taylor lived from the Greenwich post office. It was a low, rambling white house set back from a tree-lined road. The girl who answered my ring had dark hair that came down around her shoulders and wide gray eyes that were sure and young and lovely.
Yes?
You Miss Morgan Taylor?
Yes, I am.
I'm Lieutenant Mark Deglin of the New York Police.
Oh?
You know where I can find Kendall Payne?
Oh, the silly fool. He said something about leaving last night, but I thought he was just being dramatic.
When was this?
Well, I went down to his place with him last night after we left the gambling club. I've been seeing a lot of Ken, but I just couldn't keep on. He was always getting into fights and picking arguments, so I told him I wouldn't see him anymore. That's when he said he'd leave.
And that's the last time you saw him?
Yes.
But there's something else.
Well, yes. It wasn't time for my train yet, so I walked around in the rain. Then I remembered that I had a date to meet Ken in town tonight, and I went back to tell him I wouldn't be there. But he wasn't in his room. I had no idea he'd really left.
You think you might have gone back to the gambling club?
Why do you ask that?
Well, after you left the club last night, a man was killed. The man Payne had a fight with.
And you think he ran away because of that? He might have. Ken was, well, pretty neurotic.
You in love with him?
Oh? I'm very fond of Ken. But that's all, Lieutenant. But I'd hate to think that anything happened to him.
You've no idea where he is now.
If you'll wait a minute, I'll go with you. I was just getting ready to leave myself. He might show up to keep that date with me tonight at Morney's on Bleecker Street. We can wait for him there.
She rode back to New York with me. And after the first few miles, we stopped talking about Kendall Payne and talked about ourselves. She was really a beautiful gal. I kept glancing sideways at her profile. Maybe this case was going to turn out better than I thought. When we hit town, I called you, Captain Knight. Remember? I was doing, not mentioning what nice work it was turning into. And then Morgan and I went on to the restaurant.
Since then, I've just played around, I guess.
I know what you mean. Look, it's past 8, Morgan. What time was Payne supposed to meet you? 7?
Yes. It looks as though I've been stood up.
Well, he must be pretty scared to stand you up. If it were me, I'd risk even a murder rap to keep the date.
Thank you, Mark. Want to take me to dinner?
Well, it's a good thing you asked me. I was just about to put my handcuffs on you so you couldn't get away. I got into headquarters early next day. I just finished calling Morgan to say good morning and make a date for that night. And the desk sergeant said that you wanted to see me. I went in and Riley was with you.
Well, we got a couple of things on Payne, Mark. We wanted you in on them.
Sure. Dan, that was a nice job on Carlstrom.
He was certainly a scared guy. You know, one thing about killers, they always make a break for it sooner or later.
Yeah, most of them do. What's doing on Payne, Knight?
I'll let Riley tell it. It's his story.
There's nothing much except I talked to a number of people who think they saw him. I got a couple of them outside.
Might as well bring them in, Riley.
Yeah, okay. Morning, Gold.
Sure.
This is Captain Knight and Lieutenant Deglin. Gold. Mr. Gold is a cab driver. He got out of bed to come down and help us.
Hey, sure, Chief. Anything to help you guys out.
Okay. Gold, tell him the story you told me.
Hey, sure. Well, like I said, I picked up this fare downtown last night about 1 o'clock. Big guy with a bandage over one eye. He's carrying one of those soldier kit bags, you know? Wanted to go to the station, Grand Central. He was in a bad temper.
Now, take a look at these pictures. Now, where did I put that other... Oh, here it is.
It might have been either one of these two. They look a little alike. Without the bandage, I couldn't swear which one.
Okay, thanks, Gold. If we need you later, we'll call on you.
Sure. Anytime, Chief. Anytime at all.
Well, pretty close. One of the two was a picture of Payne.
Who was the other one he thought looked like Payne?
An old newspaper picture of you, Mark.
Me?
Yeah. You didn't know I collected all your publicity, did you? It'd have been funny if he just identified you.
Yeah. Yeah, very funny. Who's your other witness, Riley?
An old lady who lives in the house across the street from Payne's place. Will you come in now, Miss Meacham? Miss Meacham, this is Captain Knight.
How do you do, Miss Meacham?
How do you do?
This is Lieutenant Deglin. Mrs. Meacham, Mark.
I've seen you, Lieutenant.
You have?
Oh, yes.
Oh, well, maybe it was when I was over to Payne's the other night, huh?
Oh, no, I didn't mean there. In the papers.
Oh.
Your picture's been in the papers a lot.
Yeah, I guess it has.
Mrs. Meacham, Detective Riley tells me that you saw several things the other night. Things that puzzled you.
They certainly did puzzle me, Captain.
You see quite a few things in the neighborhood, Mrs. Meacham?
Well, some say that's all I do. Well, I say when a body gets old like me, there ain't much left but looking.
Of course. Now, what did you see the other night, Mrs. Meacham?
Let's see. Oh, that was night before last. Well, like I told Mr. Riley, I couldn't sleep. So I was up late and I saw Mr. Payne and his girl go in. But I didn't see her come out.
You didn't see her come out?
I made tea. Might have missed her. I have to have my tea, you know. But I did see her go back in later.
How much later?
Oh, maybe half an hour, or maybe more. But before she came back, somebody else left.
Well, that must have been Payne.
Well, I don't rightly know. He was wearing a bandage and was carrying his kit bag, but he didn't wave to me.
Didn't wave to you?
Oh, Mr. Payne always waved to me when he went out. So it was mighty funny he didn't that time.
Well, maybe he just forgot. What happened after that?
No, sir. He never forgot to wave. Oh, well, anyway, about 20 minutes later, Mr. Payne's girl came back. She stayed just a little while and then went away.
That's very interesting, Mrs. Meacham. Is that all?
Of course it is. And that was a lot for a neighborhood where nothing ever happens.
Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Meacham. We'll call you if we need to talk to you again.
Well, I won't remember any more than I have.
Well, let's go, boys.
Where are we going?
I've been behind this desk so long, Mark, I'm getting calluses. I'm going over to Payne's room with you and Riley.
The room was as I remembered it, except there wasn't any body on the floor and the police technicians were there.
Now, let's see now. The old lady says she saw the girl come in twice, but never saw her go out. Any other way out of here, Riley?
Through the window.
Let's take a look. You men through with this window?
Yeah, all through, Captain. Found plenty of prints of some guy, probably this Payne. A few prints of a small man or a woman.
Let's look at this window.
I stood watching. They weren't going to find anything looking out of the window. Maybe they'd see the pry marks in the wood and find the sash weights were missing. But that wouldn't mean a thing. Suddenly, Riley let go of the window and...
Hey, watch it! It almost took my fingers off.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hey, Al. The sash cords have been cut and the sash weights are missing.
So what? I see what you mean, Dan. The river's near here, isn't it?
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. We'll call the harbor patrol and see what we get.
So Riley had finally bulldogged into something. The walk down to the river was short. Shorter than the last time, it seemed. The police tug was stirring the mud of the river bottom with its grappling hook. When Payne's body finally came up, the dirty water cascaded from the blanket shroud and the sash weights dripped in mud.
Well, that's that, boys. Payne didn't run away at all. Somebody killed him. I think we can wrap this one up fast.
How'd you figure that, Knight?
Well, it's easy, Mark. The girl had a fight with him. She's the only one seen going in the other night. Her prints are on the window. She probably killed him, dressed up in his clothes, made it look like he was leaving, then came back and dumped the body. It's the girl, all right.
But listen, this Taylor girl couldn't carry a big guy like that.
Couldn't she? She was in the ambulance service overseas, Mark, and carried soldiers around. Civilians aren't any heavier. I'm putting out a pickup on the girl.
Well, that's the way it was. I had an out, but it was the one out I didn't want. I didn't want the chair getting Morgan Taylor. Not when I wanted her. I'd have to fix it some way. I had to go home and think. Well, I hadn't been there long when... Morgan stood in the doorway, her eyes tired and frightened, her face white. She went past me without speaking and over to a chair. When she looked at me, I knew I was right. I had to find some way to save her.
Mark, I just heard. They want me for the murder of Ken.
I know, honey. Why did you come here?
Why? Why, because where else would I go, Mark?
But you're not forgetting that I'm a cop, too.
If you want to take me in, Mark, I'll understand.
I only want to take you one place, Morgan, and that's not headquarters. But I've got to take you in.
Whatever you say, Mark.
But I'll get you out, honey. You won't be in there long enough to remember even what it looks like. After they booked her at headquarters, I went back to the apartment. I had to figure out some way to save her and myself. But first, I had to get rid of that kit bag. If she'd seen it, everything would have been ruined. Besides, it was stupid to leave it around. Then I had an idea. There was one way out. That was to write this report to you, Captain Knight, and get out of the country. Then, when she was freed, she could join me. She was worth running for. Only wouldn't really be running. I was walking away. Well, that's that. So long, Captain Knight. I won't be seeing you. I picked up the kit bag with Payne's name on the side, went down the steps.
Hello, Mark.
Riley, what?
I think I got a lead on the girl, and I thought you'd want to be in on the kill.
But I got her, Dan. I just turned her in.
What? Where'd you find it? What's the bag?
Oh, nothing, Dan, nothing.
Kendall Payne. Mark.
Look, I found it.
Where?
In his apartment.
I was there yesterday, and we were all there today.
Look, what's the matter? You think I'm lying?
I don't know, Mark. Say, what time were you at Payne's the other night?
Look, Dan, I got something to do. Look, we'll talk about this case later, huh?
Wait a minute, Mark. That cab driver picked out your picture as well as Payne's. The old lady said she'd seen you. Maybe they knew what they were talking about.
Listen.
You weren't surprised when we found those sash weights gone, or even when you saw Payne's body dragged out of the river. Oh, there's nothing worse than a cop who's turned bad. Mark.
Get out of my way, Dan.
Hey, Mark.
I had to run. Everything had been crowding in all day. A cab driver, the old lady, the kit bag, and now Riley. Pushing in like a bulldog with his questions. I had to run and keep running. I had to get away before he could ask another question.
Mark, don't run, Mark. Don't. You shouldn't have run, Mark. You know what happens. when a guy runs.
Thank you, Ray Milland, for a splendid performance. Mr. Milland will return in just a moment.
Say, Harrow, what about Autolite's,
What about Autolite resistor spark plugs, stay full batteries, ignition systems, and over 400 other automotive, aviation, and marine products?
Yeah.
Let's save it for next week, Hap, while we salute the safest, surest, sanest drivers under the sun. And by Cornelius, I didn't say under the sod. That's the truck drivers of America, Hap. Dependable as a donut is dunkable, as a resistor spark plug is sparkable, as an Autolite product is superbable. Say, these wonderful truckers have got me wound upable. I'm delighted. I'm Autolited. By Cornelius, I'm excited.
Harlow, before these good friends have been good-nighted, remember...
Autolite means spark plugs.
Ignition-engineered resistor spark plugs.
Autolite means batteries.
Stay full batteries.
Autolite means ignition systems.
The lifeline of your car.
And now here again is Mr. Ray Milland.
It has been such a pleasure to appear here tonight with this great cast of suspense actors, and I'm expecting almost as much pleasure from listening next week when radio's outstanding theater of thrills brings you Lucille Ball in A Little Piece of Rope, another gripping study in...
Suspense.
Ray Milland may currently be seen in the Hal Wallace production, So Evil, My Love. Tonight's suspense play was adapted from the novel of William L. Stewart, Night Cry, which will shortly be made into a motion picture. The music was composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as William Powell, Agnes Moorhead, John Garfield, Edmund O'Brien, and many others. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. And next Thursday, same time, hear Lucille Ball in A Little Piece of Rope.
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Drivers, if your life depends on it, it does. Good night. Switch to Autolite.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Harlow Wilcox there. Harlow, you don't hear that name much anymore, Harlow.
No.
People aren't naming their babies Harlow
it's
anymore.
That's a nice name.
But that was Harlow Wilcox, longtime announcer on Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Did some announcing on Suspense there. Great cast. Ray Milland in the starring role. Wally Mayer, William Conrad, Sidney Miller, Jeanette Nolan, Loreen Tuttle, Paul Frees, and William Johnstone, all in that. Sponsored by Autolite. That was Night Cry from October 7th, 1948. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa. Hey, Mike, look, Lisa's up. She's not sleeping.
Yep, still standing. Absolutely. Crazy, right?
You know what? I see what she did. She painted on her eyelids. She painted eyes on her eyelids. So she really is sleeping.
Truth be told, I took a nap today. I don't know
all
if you
right.
can tell. Maybe I'm all
right, Lisa,
bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
This is 2 weeks in a row, I think, that she's been up.
That's a lot.
But we haven't had to use the siren. We have a siren, you know, that we use. This is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater. It is 1:08 in the morning, and I'm usually about 5 hours sleeping by now. Yep. Right around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
It looks like you
I'm
might
out.
Need that beauty sleep.
You know what I do? I watch Bill O'Reilly.
Uh-huh.
I like his show.
And boom.
And then, well, I tape it. You know, I tape it. Yeah, it comes on at 7 o'clock. I tape it. I watch it around 9 o'clock, and I'm out, you know. So that's kind of my, that's
yeah,
about
it.
Sounds
like
that's
an exciting
that's about
life,
it.
You,
I,
know.
You know, Bill O'Reilly and classic radio.
Well, that's not
do you
not
tape
a bad
it on
combo.
Your VCR?
Yeah, I tape it. No, actually, I tape it on my Betamax. So, yeah. And all right, this hour it's Gangbusters. We play classic radio shows here, and that's a classic radio show for sure. That's coming your way this hour. It's all brought to you by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars as Jack Reacher in the upcoming action thriller Jack Reacher Never Go Back, the sequel to the 2012 film Jack Reacher.
All right.
And if you guess this celebrity, you can win two tickets to Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, playing right now at Theater at the Center.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Maverick in 1986's Top Gun.
That's classified.
It's what?
It's classified. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Right, Lisa?
That's right. So we don't want any of that.
All right. So if you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Win some tickets to see The 39 Steps. We'll find our winner after this break.
You are listening to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
That's classified.
It's what?
It's classified. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
We have Chris on the line from Midway. Chris, do you know that voice?
Absolutely. It's Tom Cruise.
You are absolutely correct. That is Tom Cruise. You are a winner. You have won a pair of tickets to Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps, playing at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana, through March 20th. Are you a theater fan?
No, this will be my first time.
Oh, good. What a great experience. This will be really great. There's four actors and 140 characters. So I hope you enjoy it. You can check them out at theateratthecenter.com. Thanks so much, Chris, for calling in.
Thanks so much. You got a great show.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you calling in and listening. This is the WGN Radio Theater. My co-host is Lisa Wolf, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. Quite the dimples on you, Lisa.
Yeah,
you
know, they're
even bigger than I remember them.
Really?
Being.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just smiling.
I mean, when I dream about you at night, they're not as big as what they are right now.
Right.
Yeah. All right, it's time for Gangbusters. And this show was really cool because it was created by Phillips H. Lord in 1935. It was a government drama. It was known as the only national program that brings you authentic police case histories. Now, these were closed cases from the files of the FBI. And J. Edgar Hoover was really involved in this show. He oversaw the program, picked the episodes to, you know, the stories to talk about. And each of these shows opened with a barrage of loud sound effects, shrill police whistles, convicts marching, police sirens, machine guns firing, tires screeching, which led to the popular catchphrase, coming on like gangbusters. It comes from this show. It aired on radio until 1957, aired from 35 to 57. Then a TV version premiered in 1952, hosted for a time by Chester Morris. And Chester Morris played Boston Blackie in the movies. So a nice history there on Gangbusters. We have an episode for you from January 5th, 1946. It's called The Case of the Rumbold Vault Robbery. Maurice Tarplin stars in this. You'll recognize the voice of Maurice Tarplin. He was the mysterious traveler plus the strange Dr. Weird. Let's tune this in. Part one now of Gangbusters.
And now Gangbusters. Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. The only national program that brings you authentic police case histories. Gangbusters presents Louis J. Valentine, former commissioner of the largest police force in the world, who will interview by proxy Lieutenant Tom McGrath, Chicago Police Department, retired. Commissioner Valentine.
Lieutenant McGrath, I know Winsel Urban terrorized the Midwest for years.
Yes, Commissioner Valentine. To Winsel Urban, crime was a big business. Where others sought thousands, he went after millions. Urban was so cunning and so daring that on one occasion he was able to rob hundreds of families of their life savings at one blow.
And that's tonight's case, Lieutenant McGrath. Where would you like to begin?
A few months ago in Chicago, Commissioner, a slender, wiry man named Lou Morgan was keeping an appointment in a large gymnasium where prize fighters exercised and trained.
Wait a minute,
Hi, Joe. Been waiting long?
About time you got here, Morgan. Urban's getting impatient. This time he wants everything set and perfect. And no more excuses.
Everything's okay now, Joe. I got it all figured like Urban wants.
You took enough time.
Well, he wants a clean job, Joe. It takes time.
Okay, okay. Come on.
Urban in the back room here?
Yeah, he's getting a rub down. Let's go in.
Okay.
Morgan says it's all set, Urban.
Hi, Urban.
Spill it, Morgan. It works. What are you waiting for?
Urban, I'm trying to this rub down guy.
Ah, he's deaf and dumb. Let's have it.
Now, look, Urban, I'm the front man. I can't take no chances.
He's a dummy, I tell you. Okay, I'll show you. That's enough rubbing, Mickey. See? He can't hear nothing.
Look, I'm a nervous guy, Urban.
Okay. Joe, send Mickey out of here. Hey, Mickey. Urban says that's enough rubbing for now. You should come back later. Yeah, later. Okay, Morgan. What's it look like?
It's an easy mark, Urban. Ought to be 200 grand.
I told you to find out about the burglar alarm.
I did.
Well?
No burglar alarm.
How do you know?
Well, that's what took me so long. Like I told you before, the place looks like a business office, see? But they got a big vault with a tin door. Some people don't like to keep money in a bank, so they rent safe deposit boxes from this outfit. They got hundreds of boxes.
How do you know there ain't no burglar alarm?
They got a watchman instead. He lives upstairs over the office. Me and him, pals. I make friends with the guy, see? We take a walk, have a couple of beers, and before you know it, I got the layout of the whole vault. The same as if he handed me the blueprints. Yeah, it'll be a cinch, Urban. You could drop a bomb in there. Nobody'd hear it.
What about the doctor that has his office on the second floor?
He's the only one upstairs besides the watchman.
You case the doctor?
Sure, even let the doc examine me. You got nothing to worry about him. Goes home every night.
Hmm.
You gonna do the job, Urban?
Yeah.
When?
Friday night.
Then I guess I'll blow out of town for the weekend.
You want your 10%, you do a piece of work for it.
What do you mean, Evan?
Somebody's got to put this watchman on the spot. We don't know him, so you're the one who's going
to
do it.
I know, Evan. I can't. I'm up to my neck now. If I put the finger on that watchman, the cops will hang it on me, sure.
You'll do like I say if you know what's good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Evan.
When's the watchman make his rounds at the vault?
Every hour on the nose. Takes him 15 minutes.
Does he carry a time clock?
Yeah, he punches it at 5 stations.
What's he do after he makes his rounds?
Takes a walk, maybe for 45 minutes, but look,
Evan. Shut up. You're going to have that watchman in tow. I figure it'll take 3 hours to open the vault and crack the lockboxes inside. You got to make the watchman's rounds for him, or the alarm will go off.
I'll take care of that, Urban.
Meanwhile, I don't want no nosy cop spotting the Jimmy door. So we go in with the watchman's key. And we keep the watchman where he can do no damage.
Yeah, Urban, I see your point, but look...
Friday night, you'll take a walk with that watchman at 10:15. When you get to the corner drugstore, go in for cigarettes. Leave the watchman standing on the corner. Me and the boys will handle the details from there on. Just you have the watchman outside that drugstore.
Say, I hope you didn't mind walking down here by the drugstore.
No, it suits me as long as we're walking.
Okay.
You know, walking's why I like being a night watchman.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You can go out for air, you know, between rounds.
Well, I just want to step in here for a minute.
Okay, let's go.
No. All I want is cigarettes. You wait here a minute, huh?
Oh, wait, come to think of it, I need cigarettes myself.
Oh, yeah? Well, yeah. Okay, what do you smoke? I'll get them for you.
Oh, now, listen, I couldn't let you do that. I'll come on
oh,
in.
Oh, what's a pack of cigarettes? Just stay here a minute. I'll bring you some out.
Okay, mister. Okay with me.
Pardon me, mister. We dropped a key on the curb back there.
Yeah, we wondered, could you hold a match while we look for it?
Why, yes, I guess so. I think I got a box of matches someplace here in my pocket.
Yeah, obliged, mister.
Right here is the spot.
Sure. Just a second now, I'll strike a match. Find it.
Now, Joe.
Yeah, did it. He's out cold.
Hold him up. Oh, here comes the car. All right, get him in the car, quick. Okay, step on it. Head for the vault.
Hey,
Look at it. Thousands.
A gold mine. Look at all them rings and things.
Oh, come on. We ain't got time to play with it. Crack the next box. What a haul. Am I seeing right?
$100 bills.
Joe?
Yeah, Urban?
Come here.
Keep on cracking them boxes, boys, while I see what Urban wants. Did you ever see so much dough, Urban?
That's going to be the biggest haul anybody ever got. What time is it, Joe?
It's almost one.
Time to make another round with that watchman's time clock.
Yeah, I'll take care of it.
How about the watchman?
I just checked him. He won't wake up for hours. When he does, it'll take him a week to untie himself.
Perfect, Joe. Perfect. All right, hurry up, you guys. Get them last boxes open. We're getting out in 20 minutes.
Looks like whoever broke into this vault made quite a haul, doesn't it, Sergeant?
No telling how much, Captain Rogers.
Oh, what a mess. Look at it. Mortgage papers, registered bonds, heirlooms. Everything they couldn't use. Thrown it all over the place.
They left this behind. Imagine what they took with them.
Any fingerprints, Sergeant?
Not a print, Captain Rogers.
Did you check the watchman's story?
Yes, sir. I'm sure he's in the clear. But he's all we've got to work with right now.
Somebody cased this job perfectly.
Yes, they knew every corner like a book. Right now, it points to the man the watchman took a walk to the drugstore with just before the robbery.
What's the watchman have to say about this man?
He's given us a pretty accurate description, but it could fit 1,000 suspects.
All right. But men are questioning everyone in the neighborhood, Sergeant. Maybe someone else noted this finger man. Meantime, we'll get an estimate of the loot. I hate to think of the figure when it gets totaled.
Stop claiming them rings and things, Joe. I'm trying to add.
Boy, oh boy, what a take. How much, Urban? How much?
Let me check the figures now. Let's see. Currency, coins, negotiable bonds, jewelry. 8, 13, 22, 30, 38, 6, 44.
How much, Urban? How much?
Just a second. Wait a minute. There. Take a look.
300 grand.
Take another look, Joe.
300? Oh. 3,000? You're kidding.
No. That's the total.
$3 million.
Yeah. 3 million plus a couple of thousand and all that jewelry.
I didn't think there was that much dough in the world.
There was in them tin boxes.
And we got it.
Yeah. Joe.
Don't bother me. I'm dreaming about spending my cut.
That's what I want to talk about.
What do you mean? That's already settled.
Look, Joe. A $3 million score makes this dough the hottest stuff in the country.
So?
So we can't let the boys push it out too freely.
No?
My idea is everybody takes 15 grand apiece and we pack the rest away until it cools off.
Who packs it away?
Who's the boy?
You.
Then I take care of the money until we split the balance.
I know, Urban. I know.
You think I'm crazy enough to blow out with all this dough? The boys would cut my head off.
And I'd be there with the sharpest knife.
Okay, so it's settled. Each takes 15 grand and I pack away the rest.
It's settled, Urban. But don't forget what I said.
About the sharpest knife?
Yeah. 3 million. Why, that little punk Morgan. He had the right dope. You gotta give him credit.
Yeah. Morgan's in for casing this job is 10%. You know what 10% of 3 million is?
300 grand. So what?
300,000 is a lot of dough. More than we expected from the whole job.
He earned it.
Ah, what business a punk like Morgan got with 300,000? It's dangerous.
For him?
For us. He tosses that dough around, he gets picked up. The cops make him sing and we fry. You can't spend no 3 million in Joliet.
So we give him peanuts.
We give him nothing, Joe. He's front man, and sooner or later, the cops will nab him. When a copper says boo, a punk like Morgan sings.
You mean we gotta give him the business?
Yeah, the business. But make sure it's a clean job. Morgan's out of town now, setting up his alibi. He'll be back Monday for a split. You and the boys will see that he gets it. Between the eyes.
Not 24 hours after Urban robbed the vault, Commissioner Valentine, he was planning to dispose of the weakest member of his gang.
Lieutenant McGrath, we're all anxious to hear what happened next in this thrilling case.
All right, I am. I'm dying to find out what's going on in this thrilling case here, Lisa. of gangbusters. January 5th, 1946, the case of the Rumboldt Vault robbery. You hear Maurice Tarplin as the lead in this, as heard on ABC. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, before we get into the conclusion to Gangbusters, it's time for Around the Town with Darren Foley. What's going on, Darren?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
All right. We're good. All so right. What's are we talking about Barrington again?
Well,
my hometown.
Yeah, you know, that's where I live, so.
Yeah. So what's going around the town there?
Well, listen, you know, I stopped in over at Vapor Works of Barrington, and I wanted to try some new flavors. And I found an oldie, but a goodie. This is the first time I tried it, so it's called a banana waffle. And it's a great...
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, it's a great e-liquid for your vaping device or your electronic cigarette, and it's just fantastic. It's like a breakfast extravaganza, and it's amazingly flavorful.
Really? And it'll help you to stop smoking.
Yeah, if you need to stop smoking, your best alternative is an electronic cigarette or a vaping device.
And you can get that at?
At Vapor Works of Barrington. All right, you talk to Mike and he'll help you breathe again. I can guarantee that.
Nice.
So great. Hey, so Lisa, you know, they do have the largest selection of e-liquids and electronic vaping devices. We were talking about this earlier. I just wanted to.
I could see Lisa doing that.
I
can see her.
Very unfamiliar with this concept, but I know it's a pretty hot thing right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people
popular.
Out there. There's a lot of people that need to quit smoking, you know, for medical reasons.
And you wouldn't have to have the patch on your shoulder.
Yeah, you give away my secrets, Carl. Right. What can I do?
Right on. So, hey, if you want to check them out online, you can go to their website, VaporWorksUSA.com.
All right, VaporWorksUSA.com. Perfect.
So, you know, I go to Whole Foods a lot. They got a lot of good food there. But I buy my wine there specifically.
I go to Half Foods because it's half.
It gets half price.
I can't afford the whole price.
He's
That's
cheap.
Why I do that.
That's great. So I get my wine there, and you know what I like to drink, Fabio Viviani. I always try to say Fabiano, I don't know why, but it's Fabio Viviani wines.
Right.
And they have a great display at Whole Foods. So, and you know, I looked them up, I checked them out, because I drink so much of it. And they use the highest quality
fruit. He's vaping, he's drinking.
we're getting a sense of Darren.
That's why he's so laid back when he does this thing, man. It's like, you know what, I fill my wine rack, and I don't know anything about wine, really. And so, I tried it, and it was like amazing. Fabio Viviani. I just got to be able to
Fabio
say the name.
Viviani.
Fabio
say that 400
Viviani.
Times.
Yeah, but you know what? You turned me on to this wine. It's like it's awesome, and they have all kinds of different wines there. So you go to Whole Foods, and they have it other places too. They have a website too, right?
Their website is fvwines.com.
Right. Yes. Cool. Check it out.
Yeah.
fvwines.com.
Absolutely. So. Ryan Waltz, the co-owner of Fabio Viviani Wines, he's going to come in studio here at WGN March 19th for an official wine tasting.
Mm.
So we're going to
do
be
a wine tasting
guzzling.
On the radio, Lisa.
You'll be tasting.
All right,
yeah,
very
well,
cool.
We'll be
Dan,
sharing. We'll be sharing all
this. Is that a Sunday?
Want in on that,
it's a
buddy?
Sunday.
All right.
Is it a Sunday?
Good.
I don't know.
Oh.
Right. Is there a calendar in here?
We'll
figure it out.
Either way, it's the 19th.
All right.
So, yeah, and you know what he's going to bring with him? He's going to bring a special offer for our listeners.
Okay. So, on the 19th. Very cool.
It's going to be awesome.
All right.
Can't wait.
Is that it?
That's not it. You know, I was at Grassroots, and I was checking their schedule, and they have an awesome event coming up. Grammy Award-winning Chuck Cannon is performing March 18th and 19th of this month.
Okay. Very cool.
March.
Grassroots in Barrington.
In Barrington. And, you know, if you check them out on Facebook, just look up Grassroots Barrington and you can see all the great Nashville events, Nashville guys coming up here to perform. And, you know, if you're caller number 4 right now, you're going to win a bourbon tasting for 4 people.
A bourbon tasting. 312-981-7200. Call 312-981-7200. Caller number 4 is going to win a bourbon tasting for 4 at Grassroots.
And you have to be 21 years old.
Yes, right. Or older.
Or older.
All right, very cool. Yeah.
And thanks, I do have buddy. one more. Into Frankie Ace again. This guy is awesome. He is the comedy magic showman for any party. Kids love him. Parents love him. And everybody loves him because he's extremely funny and extremely handsome. And I'll tell you what, you can find him on Facebook. If you need a great magician for your kid's birthday party, you look up Frankie Ace Comedy Magic on Facebook. He's awesome.
All right, very cool. Thanks.
He's almost as good looking as Lisa.
All right, Darren, very cool. Beautiful. I appreciate it, man. We got to get into this Gangbusters episode now. Let's get back to this. January 5th, 1946, the case of the Rumboldt Vault robbery on Gangbusters.
Now back to Gangbusters and Commissioner Valentine.
Lieutenant McGrath, Wenzel Urban had given instructions to his gang to murder Lou Morgan, the man who led Urban to the $3 million loot. What happened next?
Well, Chicago detectives questioned hundreds of people, Commissioner Valentine, to uncover even the smallest lead to the man who cased the vault for the gang. One of those questioned was the doctor who had his office above the vault. Captain Rogers went there to talk to the
doctor. I remember every detail, Doctor. As I said, the night watchman has told us he first met this suspect in the hallway, outside, coming out of your office here.
About 10 days ago, you say?
About then, Doctor. The watchman said he was wearing a plaid shirt and a
pair
of...
I think I do recall him.
Good.
Let me look back in my records. Here. February 2nd, J.L. Smith.
He'd use a phony name.
I'm certain this is the man.
You examined him?
Thoroughly. He complained of feeling sick.
Was he?
I could find nothing wrong. Hypochondriac type.
But tell me, when you were examining him, Doctor, did you notice anything about him? Any peculiar scars or marks?
Well, yes, he did have a tattoo. Bathing beauty tattoo.
Where?
The left forearm.
Good.
I noticed a tattoo while taking his pulse.
Yes. Any other marks, Doctor?
An appendectomy.
Good. How about his teeth?
I recall several molars missing. He wore a dental bridge.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
I hope I've been helpful, Captain.
Doctor, you don't know how helpful you've been. This was a professional job. The men involved probably have records. And that tattoo, the appendectomy scar, and the missing teeth are distinctive clues. They may lead us to these criminals.
Identification Bureau to Captain Rogers. Have checked cross-file system for known criminals with... 1, bathing beauty tattoo. 2, appendectomy scar. 3, missing molars and dental bridge. Results? 7 known criminals answering general description and having those marks. Sending these criminals' records to your office at once.
I asked you two gentlemen to come here to police headquarters to look at some pictures.
Yes, sir.
Doctor, will you please sit on one side of that table and the watchman on the other?
Sir, of course, Captain.
I have here 7 photographs.
Yes, sir.
Doctor, I'm going to hand them to you first. If the man who visited your office is in that group, pick him out.
All right, Captain.
Here, Captain. This one.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll just make a note of that number. Thank you, Doctor. Now, I'm going to shuffle these same pictures a bit and hand them to the watchman.
Yes, sir.
Now, sir, see if the man who went walking with you on the night of the robbery is any one of these 7 men.
Yes, sir. I'll try, Captain.
Take your time.
It's this one, Captain. I'd know him anywhere. I swear it is.
Here, give me that photograph, please.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Number 45682. Lou Morgan. It seems you... Gentlemen, agree.
I knew him in a minute.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your cooperation. I'll assign the entire robbery and burglary squads to get a line on this Lou Morgan at once.
Hello?
Urban?
Yeah.
Lou Morgan. I just got back to town, Urban. I hear we did good in our deal.
Good enough.
I hear it was in 7 figures.
Yeah. So what?
Terrific. My commission ready, Urban?
It's an awful big chunk of dough for you, Morgan.
I get 10%, though. Now you're going to pay off.
Sure, I'm going to pay off. How about coming around tonight? Boys will be here.
Boys?
Yeah, we're planning a little party.
Party? I don't want no party, Ivan.
Don't you want what's coming to you?
I know how you work, Ivan. Nothing doing. I ain't coming around.
I said come around here, Morgan. or I'll send the boys after you.
No, Evan. I don't want a knife in my back. Leave me be, will you? Leave me be.
Open up, Morgan. We know you're inside. Open up, Morgan.
Push the door in.
Okay. You don't seem to be here. The closet.
Keep your gun ready.
Okay, Morgan, come out of that closet or we'll shoot through the door.
Grab him.
No, look, honest, guys. I won't squeal, Tell Irvin, will you? Come to keep the dough. I don't want any dough, honest. I don't want any dough.
Stop squirming, Morgan.
Look, I don't want to die, please. I don't want to die. Look, tell Irvin I'll hit the road. I don't want any dough. See,
Hey. Hey, who are you guys? He didn't send you, did he? You're coppers. Yes, Morgan, we're police officers. What were you saying about Irvin?
Irvin? I don't know any such guy.
No? Well, you've told us what we want to know, Morgan. Take him downtown, Sergeant.
Piece of bad news for you, Urban.
Yeah, what?
We went to get Lou Morgan.
So?
The cops got there first.
What?
Nearly hooked us, too.
You gotta move fast, Joe. Round up all the boys. Have them at the hotel at 7. I'll meet you there. We'll split up the balance of the dough and blow. As soon as Morgan sings, Chicago's not gonna be so healthy.
Sergeant Thompson speaking.
This is Captain Rogers, Sergeant. Did you get any more out of Morgan?
Not yet, Captain, but he'll talk in time.
We can't wait, Sergeant. Soon as word of Morgan's arrest spreads, that gang will scatter to the four winds. The loot with them.
We'll get Urban, Captain. We'll work day and night until we do.
Well, it's important to recover the loot, too, Sergeant. Hundreds of people have lost their life savings. Now, you check every place Urban's been seen. Couldn't carry $3 million around with him. Must be hidden out someplace. Find it.
Okay, Urban, wake up. Come on, wake up.
Hey, what are you doing?
Hello, Urban.
Joe, Hiya, boys.
Hiya, Urban.
Yeah, I brought the boys along. You took this little room 60 miles out of town. Didn't think we could find you, huh?
Look, guys, you got this all wrong.
Yeah, you were supposed to show up at the hotel at 7 o'clock 3 days ago. Instead, you took the dough and skipped.
I'm telling you, Joe, you're wrong. I ain't got the dough.
Remember, Urban, I said I'd be the guy with the sharpest knife.
Cops were getting too close to me. I tried to reach it.
Where's the dough, Urban?
Same place it always was.
Where? Where is it?
You'll get your end in time.
We want it now. Where's the dough, Urban?
If I tell you, you'll grab the $3 million and take a walk with my split.
Where's the dough, Urban?
It's hid good. Hey, what is this? Am I boss of this mob or ain't I?
You ain't, Urban. You're just stalling for time, but we want that dough quick. Go to work on it, boys. Make them tell us where it is.
No, boy! No!
I tell you, Joe, we shouldn't have killed Urban until we got our hands on the dough.
He wasn't lying about the dough being up here in this attic by the pipe.
Are you sure?
After that workout we gave him, Urban wasn't telling no lies to us.
Okay, Joe. You're the boss. For now, anyhow.
All right, you guys. When we go in the attic, no noise, no lights. The dough's in a tin box under the floor by a pipe.
Right.
Now, I don't want myself cut to pieces and dumped in a ditch like Urban. So we split the dough right here. Okay?
Okay, with me.
Open the door. Quiet now. That's the corner over there. Got that crowbar ready?
Yeah.
Shh, you fool.
Sorry, Joe.
Fry up the floorboards. Easy now.
You see it yet, Joe?
Not yet. It's here, though.
We shouldn't have knocked Urban off yet.
See? What did I tell you? Here it is. Help me get the box out.
Okay, okay.
What? I said no lights. Who turned them lights on?
Nobody turned them on.
Who turned them on? Put your hands up, everybody. Coppers, keep them up. You're trapped. All right, Sergeant, start putting the cuffs on them.
Right, Captain. What's this all about?
We found Winsel Urban's body in a ditch near Kankakee a few hours ago.
So what?
And Morgan told us about this house, one of the many places Urban used. When you headed here, it was quite obvious where the loot was hidden. You walked right into our trap.
That Morgan, he'll get what's coming to him between the ribs.
You won't be the ones to give it to him. We've got you red-handed. You're going up for a long, long time.
Lieutenant McGrath, tonight's case is an outstanding example of efficient police work. What happened to Urban's gang? All seven of them, Commissioner Valentine, are now serving terms ranging up to life imprisonment. Congratulations, Lieutenant, to the Chicago police. Even though this vicious gang staged one of the biggest robberies in criminal records, their loot did them no good, and all they got for their trouble was death or long sentences in prison.
Gangbusters is a Phillips H. Lord production.
That is Gangbusters, a terrific episode from January 5th, 1946, The Case of the Rumbold Vault Robbery. Maurice Tarplin starring in that. Don Gardner doing the announcing is heard on ABC. These were true crime cases, Lisa, overseen by J. Edgar Hoover himself, the bureau chief of the FBI. And he ran the FBI for years and years and years. All right, hope you enjoyed Gangbusters. Hey, I want to remind our listeners that we have a very, very special offer for all of our listeners. We want to buy all of our listeners, every single person listening, we want to buy them a free dinner for two, up to $25, courtesy of Mee's Meals, our sponsor, Mee's Meals, and that's spelled M-E-E-Z Meals. Just go to meesmeals.com. And here's how it works. Mee's Meals sends you amazing food that you cook with your family, right, Lisa? These are all prepared for you. All the meals are ready to go. You cook them with your family, and you have them. They're delicious. I do it with my son, and I have three different sets of meals. I have meals coming in on Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Well, they all come in on Monday, but yeah, you can prepare them any days you want.
That's what I mean. Very good. I prepare the meals on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but they come on Monday. So here's what you do. Go to Mee's Meals, M-E-E-Z Meals.com, and you just choose whatever meals you want, because we're going to buy you free dinner for two, up to $25, and it's delivered right to your home. And you just have to put in a code radio at checkout for this. Mee's Meals is a terrific company. Go to Mee's, M-E-E-Z, meals.com. And Lisa and I are on the program.
I think one of the things that's special is it's not only delicious, it's also healthy. And they also cater to your individual tastes and if you have specific requests in terms of your diet. So they're very one-on-one, interactive that way. And if you need more information, you can check out our Facebook page. We have all the information there. It tells you the code and the website. And there's some pictures on there of some actual dishes that I've prepared. And I will post some more tomorrow when I cook my next Mee's Meals dinner.
And the other great thing about Mee's Meals, it's not like a subscription food service where you have to get so many dishes a week. It's not like that. Once you register with Mee's Meals, you can just order when you want. You can order once a week or twice a week or no times a week. It doesn't matter. They're there for you. If you want to say, hey, you know what, I'm going out of town this week, so I'm not going to order. But next week I have people coming over, so I want to up the order to six servings or whatever it is. And it all comes to you prepared. Everything's chopped. You just cook it.
And I think you'll be amazed when you see their choices.
Oh, terrific stuff.
I'm really excited. Tomorrow we're making a cheesy chicken calzone, so I'm looking forward to that.
I ordered salmon this week and the calzone. And one other thing, I can't remember.
I have a few things coming. I have a tofu and rice dish with ginger and basil.
Are you going to take pictures of it? And I'll take pictures.
I sure am, and then I'm going to eat it.
And, you know, I'm not a very good cook. I mean, pretty bad cook, actually. But it makes me feel like a chef because everything's in there. There's cucumbers. There's kind of, you know, doesn't matter how bad of a cook you are, it's all right there. It's super easy.
It's super fun, too. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, so this is a limited time offer, folks, so don't miss it. So just go to Mee's, M-E-E-Z, meals.com, meesmeals.com, and register so that you're all signed up, and then choose a dinner for two, and up to $25. It's yours free. It's on Mies Meals and the WGN Radio Theater. It's delivered to your home free, all part of this promotion. And all you have to do is put in the code RADIO at checkout. So check it out. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, the man is here. Nick DiGilio is coming up next. What's up, Nick?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, buddy. I wanted to mention to you, coming up on my show, we got the movie reviews. My dad will tell a joke. We got some great stuff coming up on the show. But I did want to mention to you, are you watching the Johnny Carson reruns on Antenna TV?
I have been. Yes, I've been watching some of them.
Did you watch? No, you were here.
I saw one with George Burns recently.
Okay. Saturday night's episode.
Uh-huh.
Orson Welles was
in. Oh, did he do magic?
He did not do magic because he forgot his magic in a different coat. He mentions that during the segment. They did three segments with Orson Welles. Yeah. It was like Orson. Whoa. It was Orson night because he had Orson right. Welles and Orson
oh,
Bean.
Very cool. Oh, really?
But I got to tell you.
Orson Bean did a Twilight Zone for us.
I remember. Yeah. He's great.
I know.
But I have to tell you, 90% of the conversation, this was from 1976, 90% of the conversation was about his radio work.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. You have to see it, Carl.
Oh, my gosh.
Insanely cool and very, very funny.
Did he talk
stories.
About being in an ambulance driving him from
yes!
one?
Yeah. Yes, he did. He did. It's exactly what he said. He rented an ambulance.
I didn't see this episode, but he talked about that. He literally had to be somewhere like within minutes so he would have an ambulance waiting.
He told that story on the air. You got to see it. It's from Saturday night,
fantastic.
This past Saturday night. And I'm not kidding. He was on for three segments, and Carson had a bunch of notes. He said he never got to them. Because they just started talking radio, and almost the whole time he was on, he told these amazing stories about his radio career.
Wow!
Yeah,
wow!
You got to see it, man.